Hello, my name is Kayla Bozzi, a three-sport athlete at Swan Valley High School in Saginaw, Michigan. I was introduced to Lead 'Em Up this past basketball season as we started by doing the 21-day challenge, and it really helped our team chemistry immensely. Lead 'Em Up has really taught me and my teammates that the little things on a team create the big things, and I believe our team was successful this past season because of the leadership and chemistry that was built through the season thanks to Lead 'Em Up.
You're listening to the Lead 'Em Up podcast, powered by Chick-fil-A. Thank you for hanging out with us today, joined by Kyle Elmendorf, our regional coach down in Southern Florida. We're continuing our classroom series episodes themed around the student and developing that environment within the school environment that is different, yet also the same as the athletic environment, right? A lot of parallels, but there's certainly some differences within it. We're going to talk about today a theme that I spend a lot of time thinking about, a lot of time talking about, and it's this theme of identity-based leadership and how one of our hopes within Lead 'Em Up is to get young people specifically to begin looking and viewing this topic of leadership in a completely different way, in a completely different light, and begin to embrace it in such a manner that it begins influencing who they are, how they view themselves, and how others view them. And it plays into this topic of identity-based leadership and how it becomes a powerful tool to get young people to begin to live this out. One thing we say, leadership is a lifestyle. It's not a sometimes, it's not an at times. It needs to be an all the time thing. It needs to be part of who we are. But in order to get it to become part of who we are, it then needs to become part of our identity. But when we can get there, we begin to see this ownership. We begin to see this buy-in, this leaning into leadership and character and the behaviors and thoughts that those leaders have in a way that is transformational, because it's who they are. It becomes how they view themselves. Others begin to view them in that light. Oh, you know, yeah, they're such a great leader. And once you begin to kind of get viewed that way, everything changes. Kyle, I want to ask you, you have now spent going on 20 years, I believe, in education.
Yep, in some capacity, close to 20 years.
This topic of identity-based leadership, why is it so critical we get this right in a school environment with the students within the school setting?
For me, coming from the educational background, why this is so important is because each individual student is important. If we say that we're in it for the kids and we do what's best for the kids, then we really need to look at each individual. And a lot of the times in school, I feel like students can lose an identity based on a letter grade or based on a test score. And I've always run to kind of the mindset and to the kids of developing them as people first. Like I tell people in an interview when I came down to Florida is I happen to teach social studies, but I teach kids, I teach people. And so when we talk about leadership being a skill, and teaching being a profession that leads to all other professions, it makes natural sense and there's a natural fit for us to develop them as leaders. Because one of the things that I constantly tell our kids is no matter what you think you might do and whatever your career interest is going to be, in some capacity, you're going to work in a team environment and you're going to need to communicate. You can be the smartest person out there. You can, you know, develop great software. But if you can't communicate what that does to someone, or you can't work in a team environment, then you're going to be easily replaced. So I think kids kind of feel this pressure in the school environment to live up to a letter grade and to get a certain benchmark score, an EOC score, an ACT score, and they get lost in the shuffle. And I've always just been really passionate about pouring into them as people, because as both you and I know, and so many of our coaches know that's out there, is it, when you give an athlete more, they perform at a higher level on the field. Well, when you give a student more than just your curriculum that you teach and you pour into them as a person, they're going to give you more in the classroom. And then, as you said, the byproduct is their identity starts to shift from just a number in the system, a letter grade, to now, well, actually, I am a good leader. I can communicate. I can work with others. So for me, it all starts there.
What do you think the current identities of average students in America is? Like, what are they struggling with? They're trying to find their way. They're trying to figure things out. They're trying to accommodate teachers' pressure, parental pressure, social pressure. They're searching, right? They're in this world. Like, where do you think they're struggling, and what do you think they're discovering when they search for their current identity? Like, where do you think it lands?
It's a great question. And I try to have these conversations often with students just to get their perspective on it. But I, like you said, I think a lot of them, they feel squeezed. They feel pressure in so many different directions to do this or to be that. And to be honest, I think the educational setting is lagging a little bit on the way the world is moving, and the kids see that. And I think there's a disconnect sometimes between teachers and the students, because the kids see what's happening right now in the world with technology, with work from home. They see what people can do in learning skills without necessarily a four-year university or whatever the case may be. But I think they feel lost. I think they feel disconnected, and they feel pressure to do or be something that they don't feel called to do or be.
Yeah, that's a good word. You know, when I think about this topic here, like, where do I think most young people are sitting, you know, from an identity standpoint, I think it lands for me in this place of not being good enough. Really simple, just not being good enough. I believe parents always are pushing them for more, so then a student's going to land in a position of, I'm just not doing good enough, right? I believe coaches and teachers pushing for the scores, for the performance on the field, on the court, constant improvement. It's going to land a student in a place of, I'm not good enough, right? When we go on social media and we see what everyone else is doing and what everyone else looks like and what everyone else wears and what they've got and what we don't have, we end in this place of not feeling good enough. And when you land in a place, and that's when you begin to identify as someone who's not good enough, you begin to see all the consequences that come from that mindset. You begin to see the depression. You begin to see the suicide. You begin to see, you know, engaging in behavior that's unhealthy because you think it's going to get you where you want to go or be more accepted and things like that. We have to recognize that there are a large, large number of young people in our presence that we get the ability to influence that are living in a place of not feeling good enough, that their identity is tied to that. And as a result, we have to be conscious of that and intentional to start curving that, to start flipping that, to start getting them into a place where they begin to view themselves as more than enough rather than not good enough. It's got to get there. And for teachers and faculty and admins, that has to be the first focus. It has to be, because if they're going to perform from a place of not being good enough, if that's where they're going to perform from that place, they're constantly going to underachieve. They won't have the confidence. They won't have the belief that they can get it done, that they can achieve greatness. So for us, even if that means we've got to step back from the pressures of the curriculum, from the agendas, from the results, and focus on this, then it's actually going to be worth our while, because it's going to grow dividends and everything else. Yeah. Kyle, time and time again, that's what I'm seeing when you begin to peel back the layers, because not all young people will present that identity. Right? Like outward, they'll put on a front, right?
Yeah. They're good at hiding it.
Yeah. They're good at hiding it. But deep down, I believe there's a lot of young people that identify and are feeling right now, I'm someone who's just not good enough, and it's causing major, major challenges. And so what do you do? How do you fix that? how do you get past that? I mean,
right. I think number one, before anything, before you reach the head, you have to reach the heart. You have to show them that who they are as a person is more important than who they are as a test grade. And I have a sign in my classrooms over the years, and I constantly point out to it beginning of the year, middle of the year, throughout. And every time we do a lead them up classroom session, I'll always reference it back. But the sign in my room says, don't ask me how intelligent I am. Ask me how I am intelligent. So there's a big difference between how intelligent I am, which identifies with the test score, the letter grade, and those pressures in the school setting, versus how I am intelligent, which flips to then your creativity, your ability to connect, your ability to lead, your ability to communicate. So when you start to show students that you genuinely care about them, because they can sniff it out. You and I both know people knock today's athletes and they knock today's students, but they are smarter than ever. And it's not from a lack of drive. It's not from a lack of, you know, ambition or anything like that. I think they're just really good at seeing through the smoke and the mirrors. And it's time that we stop kind of presenting it that way to the kids. Like, we say in some of our sessions, you know, when we celebrate others, let's tell it like it is. Well, let's tell it like it is for the kids, because they can see through it. And I think this is why it's so important to do what we're doing, because they know that it's genuine, because it speaks to them where they're at and they can relate to it. And they know, okay, Coach Bradley's here for me as a person. Mr. Elmendorf is here for me as a person. They're actually teaching me something outside of the classroom. And I'm not saying this like to brag, but it's always rewarding, because, you know, in the teaching profession, there are so many different struggles that are out there. But to get a letter every year from students to say, thank you for teaching me about life. Thank you for teaching me stuff beyond just geography, that you actually took the time to teach us as people. So that's what it's about for me. That's where it has to start, is you got to reach the heart.
Powerful, man. You know, one individual I read quite often, he's a really powerful thought leader in psychology and social psychology and such, a guy named Adam Grant. He recently wrote the following, and he tweeted this, and I shared it because I thought it was really powerful. It says, in toxic cultures, people get promoted for results, even if they damage relationships. In healthy cultures, no level of individual excellence can justify damaging people. You're not considered a high performer in healthy cultures unless you're elevating others as people. Like, what a powerful reminder, right? Like, people in unhealthy environments. I don't want to paint a broad stroke of the education system across the board, but there are some challenges in education, right? There are challenges right now, and there are tensions of, like, what's most important? And there's battles, right? Like, where should we spend our time? What's most important? What do we have to get done? And I may be playing it very politely.
Well, to your point, and you're doing a great job of it, but think about it like this, for the teachers that are out there and listening to this, think back 2 years ago to March 2020, when the world shut down in the pandemic. What was the first thing to go in the education system? Adam, you want to take a guess? What do you think the first thing that was eliminated in the school setting once we went remote March 2020?
Was it testing?
For a lot, which before was the most important thing. It's nuts. Wow. Like, for a long time, you're blocking out weeks of the schedule for testing. Now, all of a sudden, okay, we're going to push it off. And for 2 years, it's been altered and different. So that's what I tell the kids too. And
because it turned to people, the focus, is that what you're saying?
We shifted the focus a little bit more to the emotional well-being of the students because of what everyone was going through. And all of a sudden we had this epiphany that grades weren't the most important thing, but the people were the most important thing. So we can't let it go back to that. We can't let it go back to where, no, now we need to test more. No, these kids are suffering. The teachers are suffering. We need to give them something that reshapes their identity.
Hello, this is Kevin Williams from Chick-fil-A and author of Irrational Kindness. And this is today's leadership nugget. You don't have to try and create the perfect life to have an amazing story. Simply start with a solid direction you want to head, followed by hundreds of course corrections as you march on your journey. One way that helps me do this is to bookend my days. This helps guide me, reading at the end of the day something positive that fills my mind with the thoughts that give rest and reflection. It can be a short devotion or article that rests the soul. In the morning, begin by journaling and creating some space to reflect. Margin to imagine the day. Write those down. It will help keep crafting your destination, those important course corrections, or simply the next sprint race as you write your story. Bring patience, persistence, and courage to allow this space and permission for discovery. Now, let's jump back to the episode.
I didn't really think about it like that, but you're absolutely right. I'm so glad you brought that up. It goes back to the quote. I just love it, right? Because, you know, in unhealthy environments, you know, where our priorities aren't aligned, aren't correctly focused, okay, where sometimes our priorities get skewed and they begin focusing and emphasizing things that aren't quite as important. In those cultures, people get promoted for the results. And I think about in education, the test results. But even if they damage the relationship, i.e. the person, and that is an incredibly dangerous place to be at, that if we're going to celebrate test scores, let's just use that as an example, and are willing or aren't as concerned about the well-being or the person, how they're viewing themselves, identity, the depression, things like that, that the mental health of the person, that's unacceptable. Because when you step into a healthy environment, there's no level of result that justifies damaging people, right? You then will say, okay, yes, those test scores, but look at everything else, unacceptable. Like, that's the response. Because when we begin to narrow it down, the identity needs to be in a healthy place. Our young people need to view identity. Their identity needs to be strong and healthy in how they view themselves, how they view their contributions, how they view their future, how they view their performance. We've got to tap into that. And the identity, when you get it, Kyle, when you get it right, it changes things. It changes things. It can become one of our most powerful tools to change our young people's behavior, their approach, their thought process. It can change everything. I'll never forget when I first graduated college, my first job, I worked for an individual named John Motley. It was a sales and marketing firm. And this individual, John Motley, he owned the firm. The company was called John Motley Associates. And I'm new. You know, I'm 24, 25 years old, starting my career. I have some confidence, but I don't have a tremendous amount. I'm new, right? I'm feeling things out. I don't quite know my place in the workplace. I don't know my skill set. I don't know kind of where my role is going to be most, you know, valuable and things like that. Okay. I'm figuring it out. I'm searching, you could argue, very similar to today's current student, figuring themselves out. John Motley, probably unintentional. I don't think he probably did it because, like, he probably wasn't being as detailed, like, this is going to be my psychological approach to get the most out of Adam. I think he just did this naturally as his personality. He changed my entire identity, Kyle. And he changed it by the following. I'd say for the first 18 months, everybody that I met in our industry, anytime I was with John Motley and he introduced me to anyone in the industry, John would go on and on and on about how special I was going to be in this industry, about how fortunate they were as an organization to have me on the team, that I was going to be the next rock star to do A, B, and C in the industry and create change and all of that. He would do that time and time again. And I'd sit there and I would listen, and it would almost be like an awkwardness, right? Because someone's like bragging on you.
Yeah.
And for a while there, I never understood fully, like, I'm like, I hadn't even really done anything. You know what I mean? I was new. Like, I didn't earn this. Like, But what happened was, what was happening, and I'm now able to look back and reflect and see the power of it. One, John believed in me. He believed I had the potential. In the same way, I think many teachers, we believe in our students. We believe they have the potential to be special. We believe that. He was getting me to see it in myself and to begin to feel it in myself and to begin to believe it myself. And over time, it actually began to shape my mindset and how I viewed myself. It began to shape my identity. I began living up to this new standard that John had kind of presented to me, right? I began like wanting to be that next rock star. I began showing up with a greater confidence. I began kind of operating in a greater capacity because John had kind of changed my identity from this unsure, slightly unconfident, figuring this out to like someone that was bold and assertive that went after it. He didn't realize, but he was changing how I viewed myself. He was changing my identity. And once you begin to own the identity, oh, then it's done, right? Yeah. Once I crossed over that threshold, once I made my way through that barrier and I began to just believe that, no, I am valuable. I am a very high contributor. I do have abilities and skills to do this and do that. Once I believed it, oh, there was no shaking it. It was done. The identity was so strong. And that's why when you get the identity in our students and our athletes and our young people to begin to adopt that, it almost becomes hard to move them. And I, you know, there's a blog by James Clear. I absolutely want to encourage everybody to read it. The title is Why Facts Don't Change Our Minds. Why yep. Facts Don't Change Our Minds. And he says in there, it's really powerful. And it's a great reminder about identity-based feelings. That when you begin to identify a certain way or view yourself a certain way, even facts sometimes can't move you. Because, and he says the following, convincing someone to change their mind once they've established this identity, okay? Convincing someone to change their mind is really the process of convincing them to change their identity. So he talks about the fact you can share fact after fact after fact, but it almost doesn't matter if they believe this is who I am. That's how strong of a power identity is. And he connects it even deeper that once you begin to identify, so let's say I begin to identify as a believer, as high confidence, as a leader, right? With high capacity. And I begin to believe that once I start living that, that's going to begin influencing those I live around. It's going to change my circle, right? Like I'm going to start hanging with different people that are aligned with how I'm thinking, how I'm viewing myself. So then it becomes even more embedded where now me changing my mind or like changing who I am, not just going to be changing my identity, but oftentimes will be changing my entire network, my entire social circle. He goes on to say, false beliefs, well, he uses a phrase that people will even hold on to false beliefs, Kyle, if they are socially and identity reinforcing acceptable.
Oh, 100%.
Right? Where, yeah. You know, and because it says when having to choose between a fact or your identity in your social circle, you're going to go that even if that means you go against the fact.
The tug against is the greatest opposition.
So, you know, not, you know, you think about and just, you know, think about in our world about just how powerful identity is. You know, you think about like a politics of right, left, either side that you're on, you know, if that's who you are and you've made it clear to everybody. That's who you are. That's your identity. That's what you stand for. That's what you're all about. Even if the other person on the other side is right, it doesn't matter half the time. I'd say even more than half the time. It doesn't matter 90% of the time. They could be firm with the facts, but it doesn't matter because getting you to buy into those facts, to agree to those facts, to endorse those facts would mean that you're now questioning your identity and possibly your social circle. You're a sellout. Oh, I thought you were all big on that side. Oh, now you're coming over to this side, right? People aren't willing to do that. So they will hold on to lies, even to false truths, in order to do it. Now, where am I going with that? To circle, to bring this back around. It speaks to the power of identity. The power of identity. And that when we can get our students, our kids believing they are possible, believing they have the potential, believing they are the leader, they've got that leadership ability, right? That they have the power to influence others, that they're destined for greatness. They can help us create greatness, all those things, right? Confidence becomes one of our greatest strengths. When we can do that, all of a sudden we take a person and transform them. They become completely different.
That's, when I listen to those stories that you shared and how you relate it back to identity, it makes me think of just the phrase, the power of the tongue. And that's what the power we really have as educators is. When you think 20 years past for everyone that's listening right now, who was your favorite teacher when you were in school? I'm willing to bet 90% of the people out there, when they say who that person is, they're not going to talk about the lesson they taught them on the War of 1812 or the physical geography of Latin America.
And that's hard for you to say. You're a history teacher.
Yeah, I like that stuff, man.
You're a big fan of the War of 1812.
Yeah, great.
Spanish-American War. Yeah, those are great moments in history. Not really, but you get the point.
Yeah, well, my win is, can they make it through an hour and a half class and then not be tortured, right? And so, like, when you think back to anything else, your favorite teachers are the ones that actually poured into you, that pulled you aside and spoke life into you and called you up. And they realized that your identity and your worth was more than that. And, listen, here's the thing, and let's just be real about, for anyone that's listening in the administration side, the pressure to have good test scores is there. And it doesn't come from the building level. It's just something that they have to deal with, and that's part of it. And bless them, because I don't have the ability to really work in that capacity. But if we're looking at that, and that's an unavoidable, it's a necessary evil, so to speak, in today's education, like we can't eliminate that, right? How do you fix all of that? How does this all kind of come together? Well, when the students feel like they are appreciated and they're valued as an individual, guess what's going to happen? They're going to show up to school at a higher rate. Your attendance rate is going to go up. That means your letter grade at the school has a chance to go up, right? Now, they're in school a little bit more. They come to your class. Maybe your class is one of the ones that they're being tested in. Just simply by the process of showing up and not zoning out and being awake and alert because they know you care about them, they're going to learn a little bit more. They're probably going to want to do a little bit better. Matter of fact, I know they're going to want to do a little bit better on that test because they've been taught on what it means to be green. And once you have the identity of being green and you get verified as being green, you have no other option than to do your best on that test. So that's where this all comes. I always tell them it is like geography to me, because geography, I can relate it to any facet of life that we live in. But I think this curriculum and what we've built, it relates to everything. If we want to fix the problems in society, it is so hard, like you said, and you mentioned, the article there about facts don't change it, right? Because we listen to all these kids, they sit in through sessions, someone comes up, they give them facts, they give them a PowerPoint. And then a month later, you asked them, what did you learn that day? I don't know. They came and they told us not to do drugs. They came and they told us to show up to school. But when you replace all that stuff, which some of our previous guests have alluded to, and I'm sure the next ones will allude to as well, when you replace that with a unique language, an intentional curriculum that you can reference at the drop of a hat, that's who they become. That's who they see themselves as. And everything else in the school setting benefits as a byproduct of it. So the identity is everything.
If you follow me on social, you probably see this trend where I love, love, love calling people legends. You never noticed that, Kyle?
Speaking life into it, right?
Legends. I mean, I think actually today, I'm looking back at my social media today, I did a cycling class this morning. I posted a photo with our group and the instructor, and I said, the legend of our cycling studio, because she does an incredible job. Posted on Facebook today, a cool picture of a principal in Maryland with one of our football players. They're both wearing their Lead 'Em Up hoodies.
Saw that.
They're repping it in the hallways, which, by the way, if we ever sell those Lead 'Em Up hoodies again, if you're listening to this, you better jump on that, because they are the most comfortable things. They are so sharp. But made a reference how one of the best principals in the country, Beth Thomas, rocking her Lead 'Em Up hoodie alongside the leadership legend, Matthew Longa, senior, right, football player. Man, I love doing it. And I'm not just simply just throwing phrases out there, false flattery or anything like that. No. These people, I believe, actually, they really are special. They really are incredible. They've got incredible potential. They're working really hard. They're trying to do all the right things. And I want them to begin feeling that love, feeling that energy, kind of grabbing a hold of that belief that I have in them, that they can begin to then have in themselves. And I love just praising, oh, my legend. He's a legend. Or like after they get verified, listen, there's a reason Matthew he's money. Look at him. He's got it on his helmet. He's money. Man, I want them to begin to believe that, not in an arrogance, but in a healthy confidence that believes they can accomplish it. Right. And because if they begin to believe it, man, everything changes. They become firmly planted in it. And to that which gets planted will flourish. When you are planted in a place with a strong foundation where you believe, you will flourish. But if you're planted in unstable ground, unstable footing, uncertainty, disbelief, unbelief, questioning, doubting, it's going to be very difficult for you to reach your full potential from that place. Nobody reaches their full potential when those are the identities within them. It doesn't. No. They struggle to make it through when that's their identity. Okay. We've got to pour into that. And so teachers, coaches, administrators listening today, we've got to make sure that we are moving our students from places where they view themselves as not good enough to a place where they really believe that they are more than enough, that they have the ability. We've got to make that shift. And that could be one of the greatest shifts that we make in the lives impacting those that we lead. If we can shift them from, I'm not good enough because this test score is just never good enough. And it's not good enough for my parents. And it's not good enough for that college. And I am a good football player, but I'm not good enough because I'm not as many stars as that person. And we have a good team, but not as good as that team. So, I'm pretty, yes, but not as pretty as so-and-so on Instagram. Yes, I'm good, but I don't have as many followers as so-and-so. And like on and on and on we go that we're not good enough. And once again, we're not going to experience the growth and potential that our young people can experience if that is the foundation to which they're operating from. So we've got to work on that. Kyle, appreciate as always your contributions, your heart for this stuff, your insight from an education standpoint. But identity-based leadership, once we get it, once we believe it, it almost can't be shaken. It almost can't be moved. Everything changes. We appreciate you listening, everybody. Thanks for taking some time with us today as you go through your travels, working out, wherever you happen to be listening. As always, make sure you check out Lead 'Em Up on all the social platforms. We're doing more and more and continuing to grow bigger and bigger. And we're excited about the impact that we're continuing to experience and be a part of with the schools and teams that are utilizing our program. So we appreciate you all so much. We're humbled. Till next time, on behalf of the entire Lead 'Em Up team, I am Adam, and we're out. We want to take a moment and thank our friends over at Chick-fil-A for partnering with us on the Lead 'Em Up podcast. Chick-fil-A is mostly well known for their incredible original chicken sandwich and those amazing waffle potato fries. But what people might not understand is there is a lot more going on behind the counter. You see, every Chick-fil-A is individually owned and operated. by someone who deeply cares for their community and for their team. So next time you get an urge to go buy a Chick-fil-A, remember, it is more than just a chicken sandwich. We are thankful to Chick-fil-A and thankful for you for listening. So until next time, have fun and lead them up.